Good evening, friends. This is your host on Valley Writers Read, Franz Weinschenk, delighted to welcome you to another program featuring the stories of local writers. And tonight, a fine story set in the mythical town of Gulliver out in California's high desert by Don Parkey, a writer we've had on before. He entitles his story, The Distance Between Stars, which will be read by Linda Quinn.
And even though I know how very far apart we are, it helps to think we might be wishing on the same bright star.
And when the night wind starts to sing a lonesome lullaby, it helps to think we're sleeping underneath the same big sky.
Here's Linda.
The Distance Between Stars. She looks out the narrow vantage of the kitchen window, painted shut to the barn brown Bermuda lawn. Claire notices how a pattern of gopher holes eerily matches the distance between the stars of the Little Dipper on a clear desert night. Near the back gate, a worn tractor tire's hangman noosed to the still muscular arm of the old black walnut. Beyond, the sky stretches and fades into lighter and lighter shades, becoming near transparent at its edges. She reaches out a finger and retraces the slender erratic path of a drop past her face's image in a warp in the glass. Her breath too shallow, too distant to fog the pain. Claire draws in a deep breath, moves closer, slowly exhales. A warm breath slowly moves past her lips. A small cylindrical fog appears on the window, an apparition that fades in concentric circles, disappearing as suddenly as it appeared. It is somehow strangely reassuring, comforting. "He's out there," she releases the words into the room.
"Who, Mama? Someone in the yard?"
A small, clear voice comes from behind Claire. She turns halfway towards the kitchen table. "He's out there somewhere." Claire half smiles as she returns her gaze to the window.
"Oh, him."
"Yes, Mr. Wright." A long silence drifts between them. Dina rises from the kitchen table and walks to her mother's side. She, too, looks out the kitchen window into the backyard and beyond. After a long passage of time, Dina's voice quietly interrupts the silence between them.
"Mama."
"Yes, dear." Claire's gaze still fixed to a thin, silver cloud fading over purple-hued hills.
"Is that what you suppose is on his mailbox, Mr. Wright?"
"Dina, I know what you're doing. Sit back down and finish your breakfast."
Without comment, she quietly returns to her seat at the table.
"Dina Leanne, I can feel your stare burning into the back of my head. Am not. Am too. Now stop. And I can hear those gears in your head grinding. Are not, Mama. Are too."
"Mama, I wonder if he's having breakfast right now, just like us. You know, Mr. Wright."
"Oh, Dina, don't get started. I'll bet Mr. Wright's probably just finishing up his breakfast and he's going out to get his morning paper in the suburbs. And at the same time, Mr. Wrong is across the street getting his morning paper as well. And there they both are in their matching blue velour robes, both with a single but still looking mug filled to the rim with piping hot coffee. As they walk past their perfectly trimmed lawns and their perfectly manicured shrubs, Mr. Wright spouts, 'Morning!' Mr. Wrong returns, 'Morning!' with equal vigor. Both men raise their morning paper over their head to complete the greeting. All the while, Mr. In-Between is standing in the middle of the road watching all this goings-on and gets hit by the milk truck making its morning delivery in the burbs.
'Sure is a shame about Mr. In-Between,' says Mr. Wright. 'Sure is,' responds Mr. Wrong.
and they both raise their morning paper one last time, turn and shuffle in their slippers, back up their brick walkways past their perfectly trimmed lawns and their perfectly manicured shrubs. Two suburban automatons, each sure to wipe the fresh-mown lawn off their slippers before returning to their perfect homes, perfect jobs, and their perfect lives. Claire carefully wipes her Aunt Bertie's large, thick depression bowl and returns it to its spot over the Frigidaire. She turns.
Oh, this one must have taken weeks to think up. Are you done?
Almost.
Well, get it all out.
Dina's eyes light up. She disappears into the living room and reappears moments later with the phone book.
Oh, I'll bet he's in the yellow pages, Mama. Reynolds, Richards, Ricker, Rooker, Rubikowski.
No, Mr. Wright.
She closes the phone book and slumps her shoulders like a wounded bird as she returns it to the living room. Gingerly, she returns to the kitchen. Claire, intently focused on every move.
Mama?
Yes.
How do you know? I mean, really know?
Know what, Dina?
That Mr. Wright even exists.
A woman knows.
I mean, he could have been born in 1652 and be long dead. Or you could have passed him on the street yesterday and your paths will never cross again. Or he might have just been born.
I don't want to be cruel, Mama, but who's going to want you in 20 or 30 years?
Oh, sure you do.
Sure I do what, Mama?
Cruel. You like being cruel to me.
Dina looks at two poached eggs staring back at her. A small smile passes across her face and is gone.
Do not.
A long pause.
Mama, you never answered me.
A woman knows. If I would have passed him on the street yesterday, I'd have known. And if he was the one, our paths will pass again.
Destiny.
Now turn your chair around. Eat your breakfast. Your eggs are getting cold.
And your eggs are getting old.
Dina, is that any way to talk to your mother?
That's what you want, isn't it, Mommy? You want to find Mr. Wright before your eggs get too old, old and cold.
She pushes her plate to the center of the table. Tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock. Dina Leanne, what are you doing now?
Ooh, Claire's trying to scare me with my middle name.
She begins rocking side to side in her chair.
Dong, dong, dong. Mama, hear that? It's the sound of your biological clock. All on board, last chance to suburbia. Dong, dong, dong.
Dina rocks slowly back into the vertical position and stops abruptly.
You're going to find Mr. Wright and move to the burbs. And to make your little suburban family complete along with the two-car garage and his and her remotes, you'll want a little duty maker, a boy to carry on the family name. And I'll be part of your old life and get thrown out with the old mismatched dishes. I'll end up with living with Aunt Jolie in her one-room apartment over the kosher deli.
Okay, drama queen, enough. First and last of all, I'm 38.
39 next month.
I'm 38 as of today, and I can do basic math. There's no way my frayed nerves can raise another one of you through their teens when I'm in my 50s. I seriously don't think I'll survive you. The same small smile passes across Dina's face.
Mama.
At least finish your juice. She hurriedly gulps the full glass.
Mama.
I have heard enough. Get upstairs and get out of those pajamas and that ugly old robe and put on some street clothes. Brush your teeth and hair. We're going into Gulliver.
But, Mama, I have something I want to tell you.
You've got 10 minutes to get dressed and that bed made.
Now, Dina. Now.
Dina rises slowly, walks to the base of the stairs and stops. Pirouettes on one foot.
Claire has an attitude this morning.
Go! And the ritual chase ends with Claire halfway up the stairs as Dina slams her bedroom door.
Oh,
Damn, I used to catch her. She says in halted puffs, slowly turns and walks back to the kitchen window. The thin cloud she had been watching has disappeared, and the hills have flattened and turned a stone gray. She finishes clearing the table, wipes down the counter, and begins her ascent to Dina's room. Claire places three small, evenly spaced taps at the top of the bedroom door, repeating at the bottom, and then the center of the door. Password! Bookworm, you may enter.
Are you ready?
Soon, Mama, soon. Dina, where's your goldfish?
Burial at sea.
You flushed another? If you're going to have a pet, you're going to have to feed it. Life is in the details. You have this grandiose intellect, and you can't even put your socks in the hamper. And you wonder why I won't let you have a dog. Just a little dog, Mama, a terrier. Doesn't matter if it's a teacup chihuahua. You won't be able to flush it when it dies of neglect.
Oh, Mama, I remember what I wanted to tell you. Mona married a biker Friday.
Okay, wait a minute. Back up a little.
Mona, the waitress at the High Desert Diner.
Yes, you can talk faster. I'm not retarded.
Well, Mona married herself a biker on Friday.
That's none of our concern.
Maybe not, but Mama.
Yes.
His name is Scout.
The biker?
Yes, Mama, and he claims he's some kind of born-again, self-proclaimed faith healer. He unzipped his leather jacket to show me his white collar, and Mr. Jack's popped out.
Claire sits slowly onto the side of the bed.
What? Mr. Jacks.
Oh, you're not making sense, Dina.
Sure I am, Mama. You're not paying attention. What did I just say?
Oh, Dina.
Claire.
Stop trying to push my buttons and go on. Mr. Jacks is a wire-haired terrier.
Oh, he's so cute. He has a yellow bandana tied around his neck, and he has the golden-colored eyes.
Sometimes Scout lets him ride on the gas tank with his paws on the handlebars. Claire touches Dina's arm.
That's not safe.
Oh, it is. Scout glued Velcro to the top of the tank on the spots where his paws touch the handlebars.
He has his own tiny helmet and goggles.
Mr. Jack's even got this little goatee popping out from under his chin strap. Scout says most of the time he just stays in his jacket and sticks his head out from under his beard, especially when they're traveling through rain or snow. Let me get this straight. We've got a man with a dog's name, Scout, and a dog with a man's name, Mr. Jacks, and Mona, the waitress from the High Desert Diner, riding off to their honeymoon on the back of a motorcycle with a man she barely knows.
Oh, hog, Mama, hog, you know, a Harley.
Dina leaps off the bed, grabs a chair from her desk, flips it around and straddles it.
That hog was jet black with saddlebags and lots of chrome. All three of them had matching helmets and bandanas.
Oh, it was a sight, Mama, it truly was. Mona with that peach halter top she always wears and that AF 72 tattoo over her left breast, plain as a day for all to see. Her skinny legs just a-rattling, and those old magnetic ankle bracelets for her arthritis just a-ping, ping, ponging against the chrome.
Scout revs up at the far end of Main Street by the Tower Feed and Seed. He builds up speed past the Devil's Corolla, pops a wheelie right in front of the High Desert Diner.
Dina rears her chair back onto its back legs.
Boom!
She yells as the front legs slam back onto the hardwood floor.
Scout drops the hog back onto two, cuts the throttle and rolls slowly up in front of the coconut teaser bar and grill. Oh, it was a sight to behold, Mama. It really was.
Dina jumps from the chair to the bed, rolls over and sits alongside her mother, looks her squarely in the eyes.
But that wasn't the best part.
Claire leans in closer. Go on.
All the while he's doing this, he's preaching at the top of his voice.
Preaching about what?
He's reciting from the Bible.
Oh, he must have had a proper upbringing.
Are you sure?
Oh, I'm sure all right. He was preaching scripture, chapter, and verse.
Then?
Then he revs his Harley a few times, Mona blows me a kiss, and they made one last slow pass right down the yellow line of Main Street.
By this time, everyone's gathered alongside both sides of the street. And you know what?
What?
Scout and Mona were doing the Queen Wave.
Mona tried to free up Mr. Jack's hairy paw, but it was good and stuck to Velcro. No event ever goes off without a hitch.
The Queen Wave?
The Queen Wave, Mommy, you know. Here, raise up your elbow level with your shoulder.
Good.
Now, open your hand, but keep your fingers together.
Oh, good, good.
Now, turn your wrist left to right, back and forth.
You got it. We're doing the Queen Wave.
It was like some sort of royal procession riding slowly down Gulliver's Main Street and slowly leaving out of town.
Oh, the look on Mona's face was like a baby's first Christmas.
Ain't new love grand?
Ain't new love grand?
You watch too many old movies in that old terry cloth robe. That's not love, it's infatuation. Mona's like Liz Taylor. She's in love with love. There's no such thing as love at first sight.
Love, true love, takes time.
Ugh, I give it 2 weeks. I give it 3, Mama, an extra week to hitch a ride back from Eureka.
Think he'll take her back?
Who, Scout?
No, Fizz.
Well, he did the other 5 times. When she got here, she was Mona, oh, what was her last name?
Galassi.
Yes, yes, it was Mona Galassi. God, what a memory you've got. You couldn't have been more than 5.
Mama, she was Mona Galassi.
No sooner did she get a divorce than she ran off with that one-eyed feed store salesman.
She clenches Dina's arm tightly.
That's right. That's right. How did...
Dina spins around and grabs a black notebook from her backpack, clutches it to her chest. She recites slowly and clearly as if she had practiced.
Then she was Mona Bailey, then Mona Rafferty, and then Mona Collins, then Mona Bryce.
Now?
Now she's Mrs. Scout Solis.
Oh, you write things like this in your journal? That's sick.
And you know what, Mama?
What?
Every one of them was fat.
Are you sure?
My journal doesn't lie.
Dina flips to the first page marked with a paper clip.
Cliff Chippy Bailey, one-eyed feed store salesman, ears stuck straight out, fat. Next, Thalgood Rafferty, left eye twitches, nice smile, but has crooked teeth, fat. Collins, just Collins, loved juju beans, short, long red hair in a ponytail, had women's hands and freckles over the bridge of his nose, and yep, you guessed it, fat. Billy Bryce could play piano and acoustic guitar, but couldn't carry a tune. He was the smartest of the bunch,
and also the fattest.
I still need to finish Scout. Scout Solis, Nike's black Harley with saddlebags, jiggles when he laughs, has a voice like a cross between, Orson Welles and James Earl Jones.
Dina, you really do watch too much TV.
She continues undaunted. Would make a great Santa. White collar, leather jacket, Mr. Jack's, and fat.
I give it 3 weeks, Mama.
Boy, I give them 3 weeks also. It's a long way back from Eureka. And stop calling people fat. You can be so cruel.
Claire gives them 3 weeks.
Mother gives them 3 weeks. Go on, I want to see you cross out Claire right now and write mother.
Oh, God, have a cow.
Dina removes each paper clip, takes a long string bracelet from around her neck. With the attached brass key, she leans over and unlocks the cedar chest at the foot of the bed. Dina, a cedar chest is supposed to open away from the bed. I like it to open so that I can lie in bed and go through my stuff in private. You have never let me see. You can see, Mama, but don't touch. Dina locks the lid open and stretches out the length of the bed. Mama, come lay by me. You promise not to touch anything in my cedar chest?
Promise.
The chest is filled with 3 stacks, 2 magazines, 1 journal. She puts the journal back into the slipcover and places it atop a stack of black journals. Dina, what is all this?
This stack is for science and nature, and this stack is JAMA.
Dina looks apologetically at her mother. Medical journals. Dry, you wouldn't like them.
Where's the other stuff?
What stuff? Stuff, you know, shells from our trip to the Venice Beach, sand dollars, smashed pennies off the Golden Gate Bridge, pine cones, torn-in-half ticket stubs from Knott's Berry Farm, postcards from the Grand Canyon, dried corn, flowers, cutouts, coloring books, I don't know, stuff. Couldn't you at least have used different colored journals with colored pens or stickers?
Oh, right, Mama, too juvenile. You are a juvenile.
Look, each has its own plastic slipcover like some body bag or something displayed in a museum.
Clay says it's good habits that make good collectors.
This Clay, is he a friend from school?
No, Clay is old. He's your age.
Thanks.
He's a parrot head.
Claire responds with a blank look.
Parrot head, Mommy, you know, tropical shirts, sandals, casual Fridays, margaritas, Jimmy Buffett.
Oh, one of those.
Yes, Mama, one of those. Weren't you a deadhead in the 70s?
Who said?
Aunt Jolie.
Well, Aunt Jolie has a big mouth. I only went to 3 Grateful Dead concerts in the late 70s.
Aunt Jolie showed me your album under your bed. We counted 15 deadhead ticket stubs.
Oh, that is the last time Auntie Jolie visits. Tell me more about this parrot head.
Clay. What are you doing hanging out with a grown man?
We don't hang out. He's the new owner of Gideon's Contact.
What happened to Connie?
Retired.
You saw him the other day when you picked me up.
Right.
Why are you hanging around that old musty bookstore?
Used and rare books.
Oh, right. So what do?
I stock shelves, I dust, check inventories, and unload boxes.
You have a job?
He pays me in books and magazines.
Do you ever take off that piece of twine around your neck to sleep?
Nope.
To take a shower?
Why don't you ever wear that chain I bought you?
I never take this one off.
Claire runs her hand across the books in a small box on the headboard.
What do we have here? Stephen Hawkins, A Brief History of Time.
Mama, my marker, please.
Oh, sorry. White Monkeys by Ramke. The Red Leaves of Night by David St. John. Turtle Island by Gary Snyder. And a biography by John Updike.
John Updike? You're a kid. You haven't even started your period and you're reading John Updike?
Mama, why don't you say it a little louder?
We're 2 miles from the nearest neighbor. It's true, you're 14, you look 11, and you act 45. The only thing that's developing is your brain.
Why aren't you reading Teen Magazine or trying on new shades of eyeliner or burning up the phone lines with your best girlfriend talking about a new cute boy in school?
I never see you in a dress.
And why do you mope around a musty old bookstore or hang around here all weekend like some hermit in your robe?
Well, I'm leaving in 5 minutes, ready or not.
Claire checks the back door, makes a quick walk through the house, turning off lights. She opens the front door, looks out to the car. Dina is already strapped into the passenger seat. She sits quietly reading. The short drive is punctuated with Dina in a loud voice exclaiming,
"Look, Mama!"
Claire lets out a startled, "What?"
There's this article in Science Magazine.
Oh, did you hear any of what I just said before we left the house?
Yes, Mama, yes,
just what?
Claire swings her 82 Cutlass into the last parking stall in Main Street. I have got some errands to run.
There's this article on pheromones.
Claire stops abruptly, crosses her arms, and stares intently at Dina.
Anyway, pheromones are like hormones.
Dina, I know what hormones are,
Claire remarks as she exits the car.
Anyways, the female moth can be miles away from Mr. Right Moth and they can find each other. People have pheromones too. They're odorless.
Claire stops abruptly.
Wait, if they're odorless, how do we smell each other?
I'm not talking about bloodhounds, Mama. Our brain smells chemically.
Well, I do believe in chemistry between two people.
Tyler said you have nice eyes.
I saw how you looked back at him when you were at the counter. I did not. You did, too.
He needs to cut those sideburns. We're not living in the 70s. Those Hawaiian shirts look funny in the desert.
Plenty of sand, but no beach.
Right, Mama, good one.
Anyways, he wants to go out with you.
I don't need my daughter fixing me up.
He's really nice, and he lends me all kinds of books.
Tyler says I'm an NPR head because every time I come in, I change the radio to NPR.
What do you two talk about?
Things.
What kind of things?
Things, Mama, things, like jazz and old school and like how Einstein had a closet full of the same exact suit, like pulsars and nebulas and quirks and dinosaurs and death and the ozone and crop circles and time travel and volcanoes.
And you, Mama?
Lately, our talks have been getting pretty boring because all we end up talking about is you.
Oh, we're here.
Here?
Come on, Claire. When's the last time you had a date?
Dina, I have got errands. The door to the bookstore opens.
Miss Barry, right?
Hi, I'm Claire, Dina's mom. I think we met last week.
Definitely.
But there's something different. Where are your sideburns?
Oh, I got tired of them.
I hope my daughter hasn't been hanging around being a pest.
She's been a great help. Come in out of the heat.
I can't. I have errands. Maybe next time. Claire turns to cross the street. She turns around.
Clay, is that your first name or last?
My name is Clay Morgan.
Claire Barry. Is that Scottish?
A quarter.
Any relation to MJ Barry?
Who?
The author of Peter Pan?
Oh, probably not.
Well, hot coffee and AC await.
Claire tentatively enters the shop as Dina gently nudges her on the back.
Mama, it's hot out here.
Dina, we have some books from an estate sale in Bakersfield.
So,
a magician's library.
You're kidding.
She looks at Clay's face.
You're not.
Dina grabs her mother's hand.
Wait for me.
Claire, without eye contact, timidly says,
one cup, right?
But I have errands, she states with assertion.
Duly noted, one cup, I promise.
The window slants an angle of light on a lone picture on the north-facing wall. Claire touches a bright spot on its gloss black frame as she enters.
Oh, I love black and white photos.
Well, I have dozens of Ansel Adams prints in the back. Someday I'm going to cover this entire brick wall with them. It's just that they're so expensive to frame. There's this one of the birches.
When the light catches it at this precise angle, it looks as if they're emitting light, as though they have a soul. He hands her a cup.
Thanks.
She cradles the mug under her nose.
You know, I love the smell of coffee. It reminds me of my parents' home. I just never cared much for the taste.
Oh, well, then let me make you some tea.
Oh, no, this is fine. Really, sit.
Dina, you all right back there?
Fine.
She's a great kid.
She has her moments, believe me.
Clay looks out the bay window, momentarily lost in thought. Claire skates her index finger along the rim of the porcelain mug and thinks how odd it is to have a comfortable silence with a complete stranger. She looks across to see his eyes looking towards the street, watches intently as his right hand's index finger traces across the top of his cup counterclockwise. Karma, she thinks. Looks down at her own hand clockwise. Double karma, she thinks. She follows the path of this view back to the street. They watch an old lady as she dips her head back and forth, like an old prize fighter that took one too many hits to the temple. They watch her small, fleshy arms tug a stubby boxer down the short main street of Gulliver. Clay, she says quietly.
Sorry. I was having a senior moment. It's been a big change these past few weeks. You know, good, but different.
What made you choose Gulliver?
Well, I never intended to. I get that from a lot of the locals. They never intended to settle here either. This place just seems to have a hold on people. Each seems to have a story.
What's your story?
Well, I'd been driving all day and half the night towards Laughlin, and my eyes were strobing bad. I saw a sign, Gulliver, population 742. And I think, that's my street address. Well, since I don't believe in a chaotic universe, I figure someone's trying to tell me something. I take the next exit, and there's this old motel. Bates, I think. Keep going, stupid.
Still, a half hour from Barstow, I tell myself, better take my chances here than fall asleep at the wheel. When I get to the room, it's cramped and stuffy. Oh, God, the AC is out. I lay back on the bed and watch the lights of the cars pass slowly across the ceiling and onto the wall. And there was this velvet Elvis that seemed to move on the wall each time the lights passed.
I knew I was overtired. I knew my eyes were strobing. And I knew Elvis had left the building a long time ago.
Still, you know how it is when you get yourself spooked?
Every little sound, every little movement.
Right. Well, I say, to hell with this. I grab my backpack, throw it in my GTO, rev the engine, pull down the visor to put in some eye drops, and this postcard I sent to myself falls out.
You sent it to yourself? Well, I like having something there to meet me at my apartment when I return from a trip. I don't even have a pet. Single people do things like that. Anyway, I look at this picture of the white beaches of Baja.
I turn the postcard over and it says, 13 cocktail umbrellas and I still get burned. For some reason, I cut the engine. I get out of the car, I lie up on the hood and look up into the sky. I was in awe. It was a moonless night in the high desert and there were 1,000 times more stars in the sky. I felt like I could reach out and touch them.
I don't know how else to put it.
Magic had come back into my life. The scent of date palms on the cool night breeze swarmed into the hives of my lungs. I breathed deeper and deeper till my fingers tingled. Claire, I was tired, bone tired, tired of running to or from something I'm still not sure of. Tired in ways I can't put into words. I spent my first night in Gulliver on the hood of a powder blue GTO, and I got the best night's sleep I had in years. How about you?
Me?
Have you ever experienced magic? I don't even know you.
Sometimes an outsider is the only person you can confide in.
Claire stares blankly into her cup, rolls her finger around its edge. You believe in karma?
Oh, absolutely.
Claire searches the floor as she gathers words.
Well, here goes.
All my life, I knew. I just knew that one day I would wake up and know what it was I wanted to do with my life. Then one day I wake up
And sure enough, I knew.
No one could have been more surprised than me.
I thought it would be some career or saving the Brazilian rainforest or an expedition to Tibet to find enlightenment. But I was wrong. Wrong by a light year. You know what woke me? Dina. It was the first time she kicked inside me.
Till that point, having a child was an abstraction, no real bond. I really didn't even want kids, to be honest.
It's like she awoke my maternal instincts with those first few tiny kicks, and all I wanted to be was a mother to that child inside me. But when I signed on for motherhood, I never imagined it would be like this. Dina's different.
In what way?
Well, when she was 9, we were in a candy store in Calico, and this older lady was giving out samples of marzipan and leans over and asks how she liked it. Dina looks the lady right in the eye and says, "It tastes like white clown makeup." Oh.
The lady gets the strangest look, but never says anything. Oh, and this one. I once killed a fly, and Dina says to me so seriously, mind you, this is a 5-year-old speaking,
"Mama, you shouldn't kill flies. They might be some tiny country's national bird."
Oh, she reads the back page of every novel out loud to me, no matter where I am. She even reads them to me through the bathroom door. I feel like a captive audience. And then she still reads the entire novel. I mean, what's the point?
She also reads every magazine from the back to the front.
You know, I've seen her do that. Why?
Oh, she says it's how it's done in Japan.
Has she ever been to Japan?
No. She eats her dessert first. She says it's because otherwise she's afraid she'll run out of room.
She refers to herself in the third person.
Dina doesn't feel like drying the dishes.
Things like that. Just last week we were watching Grapes of Wrath, right? She says out of nowhere, "You know, Mama, poverty is best shot in black and white." Where does that come from? Oh, well, I didn't want to get her started. I just nodded my head knowingly. I nod my head a lot. Sometimes I wonder how Dina feels, stuck out in this big old house in the middle of the desert, just her and me. Just this morning, she goes through this whole made-up story of Mr. Right and Mr. Wrong in the suburbs. And this Mr. In-between gets run over. Oh, man, it was classic, Dina. She exhausts me on every level, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. She fills up my life so completely. At times, I feel like there simply isn't any more room for anything or anyone else.
Not even yourself?
Well, especially myself.
Dina told me Mona, the waitress, ran off with a biker.
Oh, you're kidding. I'm serious. Even the biker's giving it 50-1 odds they won't make it to their first anniversary. Dina and I don't think she'll even get past 3 weeks. Fizz is giving even money on 3 weeks. Want to wager? Well, I gave up wagering on love long ago.
Well, I put 20 down on the long shot. I saw the look in their eyes.
Do you think Fizz will ever take her back again?
I asked Fizz the same thing at lunch, and he told me that she's the best waitress he ever had, all 98 pounds of her. He said that Mona can run 6 blue plate specials up her arm and with her right hand wrap her long skinny fingers around all 3 handles, leaded, half-calf, and decaf. With a tip of the hand, she can pour over a customer's shoulder and never, he stressed, never miss the cup. And still get every plate to the table piping hot.
It's true. I mean it. It's like a show and a meal.
Dina brought in a cardboard box last week. It was really beat up. It looks like it's been kept out in a shed. Well, we have an old hay barn on the property. What was in it? More books?
Stuff, just stuff. Clay takes a paper folded in the shape of a crane from his shirt pocket. I made a list. He unfolds it slowly.
Okay, let's see. There was a matching pair of asparagus salt and pepper shakers, giant pencil with a monkey eraser, miniature Red Ryder wagon, polished hubcap, small blue dog collar, an empty fishbowl, a blue mason jar of coins, a square piece of green shag carpet, and a picture of a woman holding a baby under a huge eucalyptus tree. I'll bet there's a story that goes with each. There sure is. Claire takes the list and places it in her purse, looks Clay squarely in the eyes. Why would she share these things with you and not me? I'm her mother. She searches Clay's face as if a road map of the high desert. I've got to go, Clay. Dina, are you ready? I've upset you. No, it's me. I get talking and I can't shut up. And, well, I've just got to go. The door clangs open and she's back in the heat. She steps into the street and turns. Clay's image is framed in the door entry. She waves a tentative goodbye and then angles across Main Street towards the diner. Claire, he calls out. You have beautiful eyes. She stops at the center line without turning. What color are my eyes? Without pause, Clay responds. They are sky blue at the center and faded denim at the edges. Claire stands with her back to him for the longest time. I'll set a third plate at Sunday dinner.
Depends.
Claire half turns. On what?
On what's for dinner.
How about buttermilk-dipped fried chicken, drop biscuits, high mountain mashers, and fresh sweet corn? Clay looks to Dina as if for permission. Dina shrugs her shoulders. Who knew she could cook? She calls out, Mama, don't get run over. Claire winks at Dina and turns. Oh, great, Dina. We have a deadhead, an NPR head, and a parrot head. Where's a milk truck when you need one? As the day unwinds behind her, Claire tugs at the thought of a man in her life again. Dina is waiting quietly at the car when Claire finishes her errands. Silence sits between them in the front seat. Dina keeps her gaze focused on the occasional roadrunner and saguaro cactus that litters the drive home. This silence between them is strangely unquieting to Claire. She pulls up the gravel drive, cuts her engine. Mama? Yes? Never mind. Dina exits the car quietly, sure not to slam the door. She enters the house and heads towards her room upstairs. Claire walks to the kitchen door, wings it open. The desert breeze lifts, and she, too, can smell the faintest smell of date palms. Lies back on the rusty lawn chair and watches as the shadow of the black walnut reaches toward her. The sky begins to blaze an eerie iridescent red-yellow, then teal, and then just as quickly fades. The tree's shadow is quietly swallowed up in darkness as sleep overtakes her. Claire awakens to her cell phone. Her wristwatch glows 12:30.
Hello?
Guess who?
Oh, God, Jolie, do you have any idea what time it is?
That is so strange.
What?
For a moment, I could swear I was talking to Mom. You have got her voice nailed. Anyway, a little bird told me you have a date Sunday.
Claire's eyes rise to Dina's window. She can see Dina's image in the window.
What did she tell you? Sis, it's about time.
He's just coming for dinner. It is a non-date. I wasn't ready for even that until now.
Oh, get over it. Ken left you a decade ago.
He had no choice.
Right, he had no choice. He was a drunk. Maybe you don't remember those long conversations he would have with the mailman outside the post office at midnight. How he'd introduce the two of you every time. How was it being introduced to a statue?
Oh, you are a broken record.
Talk about broken. Here we go. No, really, how about the dishes?
I have had a long day, Jolie. That set of china was from Mom. They meant a lot. I was raised off that blue pattern. If he didn't want you to have the dishes, why didn't he say so? I would have taken them. Oh, no, that wasn't his way. He stumbles in the house after one of his nights out, takes every dish, and smashes them one by one on the kitchen floor. Ken did apologize the next day. He said he felt like it was charity. He worked overtime for the next month. He was so proud when he brought home the new set of china. It really was a beautiful pattern. You never mention the good side of the man. You never mention how he doted over Dina, how he spent every spare moment he could with us. Yeah, every moment he wasn't drinking. You didn't finish the story. He buys you the beautiful china set, and 2 weeks later he comes home from a binge and one by one breaks every dish in the set you bought on the kitchen floor. Jolie, turn down the radio and listen to me. It's not a radio. I'm at a party. Just a minute. Is that better? Mutch, where are you? You know that bedroom in every party where they stack the jackets on the bed? Oh, don't tell me you're lying on the top of a pile talking to me. No, actually, a couple beat me to that. I'm in the closet of that room. God, I hate closets. Oh, are you ready to listen? Ready. Okay, do you remember the place in Montana? Well, kind of. I was pretty young. Anyway, it was an early morning in late fall. Oh, my God, are you going to take a trip down memory lane? Shut up for once. You had your say. Now let me have mine. Sorry. Take a chill pill. Anyway, I couldn't have been more than 10. For weeks, the birches blazed a vibrant yellow from the back of the pasture. And that morning, the limbs were bare as bleached bones. A profound feeling of loss washed over me. There was this really large, really old birch that kind of stood off by itself. You know, the one the Angus calves like to gather under. Well, I took a rake, and I walked to the back of the pasture. I cleared away the leaves out of the small weir and stood there to watch the water run clear. Well, I looked up at the top of that old birch, and I saw a single leaf, a single yellow star glinting in the cool breeze. An entire galaxy of yellow leaves were just gone, but here was this single yellow leaf left behind to remind me just how beautiful it all had been. In that very moment, it released itself as if I had willed it. It began its slow descent, but halfway down, something happened. What? It suddenly began to rise. What? I kid you not, it began to rise. It rose against gravity. It rose against all I knew to be true of this world. It rose against the sum of all my beliefs. It rose and rose against all logic and reason. And then, What? It reattached itself back to the very spot it had left only moments before. It did not. It did. It wasn't until that very moment I realized it was a yellow butterfly caught between seasons. Well, it was too late by then. That small event had changed me forever. That small yellow butterfly had taught me more than I've learned from all the books, all the art, all the places I've been in my life. I didn't feel magic like that again until I met Ken. Jolie, do you kind of understand what I'm trying to say? Oh, yeah, that everyday magic, powerful stuff. Yes. Need to get me some. Don't suppose I could find it at the sales rack at Macy's. Oh, you find it where you find it. I've got to go. I need to check on Dina. Good night, Aunt Jolie. Claire walks up the stairs, still wiping the sleep from her eyes, places 3 taps at the top, 3 at the bottom, and 3 in the center of the door, eases the door slowly open. Bookworm, you in here? Dina's bed is pushed tight against the huge window, fully open. Her legs are drawn up tightly into her chest. Her fingers knitted tightly around them, her chin lodged tightly onto her knees.
her small, expressionless face lifted to the night sky. Claire takes the comforter from the foot of the bed and scoots up next to her, wraps it around the two of them. They both sit there looking out into the clear, high desert night. Mama. Yes, dear.
You know, love is important only in Plato's sense.
Love is important if you want to make sense of anything in this world.
You like Clay, don't you?
Well, there's definitely something there.
Mama, you think it's cold out there?
Where?
Out there between the stars.
Crazy cold, I expect.
You think Daddy gets lonely out there?
Not as long as we hold him in our hearts. Dina's jaw slowly starts to unclench. Her fingers unlock, and she hugs her mother so tightly she can hardly breathe. Her arms go limp, and she is fast asleep. Claire brushes the hair back from her face and rocks her back and forth, and in a whisper only the stars can hear.
Good night, my yellow butterfly. Good night.
Somewhere out there, beneath the pale moonlight, someone's thinking of me and loving me tonight.
Somewhere out there, someone's saying a prayer that we'll find one another in that big song.
That was Linda Quinn reading The Distance Between Stars by Don Parkey. It's really the story of a single day in the lives of Claire, a single mom, and her precocious daughter Dina. Dina is a highly intelligent child who writes remembrances, reads books, and tells stories voraciously. Mom and daughter certainly do a lot of verbal jousting before they drive to town where Claire meets Clay, the owner of a bookstore where Dina has been volunteering, all in the mythical town of Gulliver, which is located up in the high desert of Western California. We hear a little about Claire's former husband, Ken, but at the conclusion of the story, we're sort of left to wonder if anything will come of Clay's attraction to Claire. At the time that he wrote this story, our author Don Parkey was finishing his 27th year as an art instructor for the Corcoran Unified School District. Besides his teaching, he paints pictures, does illustrating, and has published poetry, vignettes, and short stories. We certainly appreciate the insightful story he wrote for us tonight and hope he has more literary prose for us for future programs. And of course, we also want to thank our reader tonight, Linda Quinn, for the great job she did interpreting Don Parkey's story. And so we come to the end of another segment of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read story again, just go online at kvpr.org and click on to Valley Writers Read. Next week, I'll be reading a story of mine. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.